Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Azaz Sokol is a culinary anthropologist, food historian, and author of the new cookbook, Chop Chop, Cooking the Foods of Nigeria. In the tradition of Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking and Madhur Jaffrey's An Invitation to Indian Cooking, Chop Chop offers both a cultural history and a hands-on introduction to the flavors of Nigeria. I spoke with Azaz in a Culinary Arts at SPAC and WAMC on the Road event in Saratoga Springs, New York on November 15th. At the event, we were all treated to authentic Nigerian dishes prepared by Kayobi Restaurant in Albany, New York, including a goat pepper soup, chin chin, puff puff, jollof rice, and more. Born and raised in Wari in the southwest of Nigeria, Azaz is a professor of food tourism and food media at Centennial College in Toronto and makes her home in Mississauga. In 2009, she began journaling about food on her blog, Kitchen Butterfly. Before Azaz Sokol became an educator and Nigerian food ambassador, she was a geologist. As we began our conversation, I asked her how she turned her focus to the food of her homeland.
As a way to find meaning, to remember home, and it kind of blossomed into this lifelong celebration of Nigerian cuisine.
Before you made the change, how did you become a geologist? What was that? What was the drive that brought you to that? And how does it communicate and inform what you're doing now?
So Nigeria is oil and gas rich. And my dad was a marine engineer. My mom was a teacher. And I feel like geology was kind of part and parcel of the careers and the jobs that I knew as a child growing up in Nigeria, in Wari on the southern coast. And my path to geology was one where I really wanted to go abroad to study, because I was studying in Nigeria, studying town and country planning, but needed a change because at the time, the educational system was fraught with strikes. So lecturers and professors were on strike. And I'd spent 3 years in this state where half of that time had been home. You know, so I convinced my dad to send me abroad. And I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to study literature. And my dad was like, that's a weekend thing. And so I chose geology because there was kind of like familiarity. Geology informs my work in many, many ways. I think about the principles of uniformitarianism, which basically look at sequence and look at time periods. And there's a statement of the past is the key to the present. Or, you know, I also like to think of the present being key to the past, because there are these cycles and repetitions that you can identify. Geology also has very strong roots in looking at history, right? You look at timelines, you look at progressions, and I feel like that resonates very strongly in the work that I do, kind of unearthing Nigerian cuisine, you know, looking at old writing about it and just trying to piece things together and see where they fit today. So there are many parallels, and also the structure. Like, there's kind of like a methodical approach in geology and in the sciences in general that works very well in like developing a recipe or, you know, documenting the history of a thing.
I understand that you were a picky or terrible eater when you were young, and it was like a real struggle in your household.
It was. I didn't eat till the summer of 1985, August 85 to be exact. And I feel like I didn't really have a chance to get hungry before then. If you know anything about Nigerians, and I'm going to kind of give you a little expose, Nigerians tend to communicate a lot with food. So there's always an abundance. You get, like, I don't think growing up I ever really got a chance to be hungry because there was food, you know, being offered, thrown at, forced before me, and so I rejected it. And I remember being 9, my dad had taken my sister and I to Edinburgh for the Military Tattoo Festival, which is an annual festival, kind of like part of the Edinburgh series of festivals, like the Fringe Festival, a literary festival and things like that. And that day we had walked, done a lot of walking, and I think I worked up an appetite, We ended up at Wimpy's, which is the precursor to McDonald's and fast food. I had a burger, fries, Mirinda, asked for seconds. My father was shocked. It was the first time he had seen me eat without threat or tears. And then, yeah, I feel like that kind of broke the yoke of this period of selective and picky eating.
With the vast land and population of Nigeria, it's probably impossible to summarize the cuisine. But what are some of the, as you impart the message of Nigerian food through your book and through your work, what are some of the main ingredients or signature elements of Nigerian cuisine as far as you're concerned?
Whole grains, whole foods, lots of things made from scratch. Also lots of convenience foods, but lots of things made from scratch. An abundance of leafy greens and herbs. Diversity of soups, stews and sauces. Distinctly regional cuisines, but using the same ingredients in similar ways, but with peculiar differences. So like egusi soup, for instance, which is really a leafy green stew with a foundation of pumpkin melon seeds, but think of them as cousins to pumpkin seeds. In the Southwest, for instance, it will be made with specific kinds of greens, like, you know, a variety of amaranth. And in the North, it might be moringa leaves, right? But they still have kind of similar elements. So there's something familiar about them, even when they're from a different place. So regional cuisine, but also there's some national dishes with distinct origins, but are so available across the country that everyone kind of thinks of them as national, like suya, which is kind of skewered beef, chicken, meat in general, tossed in a kind of spiced, sometimes spicy, dry rub. Some varieties have peanuts, others have ginger as the top note. So many foods, but rich, abundant. Lots of porridges, paps, pottages, snacks, sweet drinks, just a whole variety of things.
And a lot of whole ingredients.
A lot of whole ingredients, yes.
Do you keep track of what's in season? Is there like a farm to table? What's in season is good for the region, good for the soul, good for the table set up over there?
That, I think, is an essential component of Nigerian cuisine that we don't think about often, and especially with like globalization, where you can get many things out of season. But in spite of that, you still see very clear threads of Nigerians eating seasonally. You'll see it on the street. You'll see wheelbarrows, fruit carts with whatever's in season. And over the last 10 years, you're also finding lots of small grocers, but also small fruit and vegetable sellers who are working with smallholder farmers, you know, in remote kind of away from city centers to bring seasonal fruits to the fore. So mangoes, when mangoes are in season in Nigeria, from February till like later in the year, there's an abundance of like, we're talking more than a dozen varieties. And the same with other vegetables and fruits. So very much Nigerians eat seasonally. Most Nigerians eat seasonally.
I'm speaking with Azaz Soko, the author of Chop Chop, Cooking the Foods of Nigeria, available now from Artisan. You live and teach and eat and cook and everything in Canada now. Do you miss Nigeria? Are you ever homesick?
Yes. So I live and work on land of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation in Mississauga, Ontario. And I miss Nigeria. I miss the warmth. I miss my family. I miss my friends. I miss fruit. I think that's one of the things that I pine for, fruit in season. But Canada has also offered me so much. And it's opened up another world of making home abroad. And for me, I wrote the bulk of my cookbook while living in Mississauga, and most of that during the pandemic. But I discovered so many similarities between Nigerian cuisine and other cuisines, and particularly through grocery stores. So I could go into a Lebanese grocery store or a grocery store that caters to West Asia and find things that we'd use in Nigerian cuisine. When I was writing my book and I was looking for smoked mackerel, my friends pointed me to East European grocers. I could find lots of leafy greens that exist in both Nigerian cuisine and Chinese cuisine. When I was looking for lemongrass leaves, I went to an Indian store. And so, like, just discovering all of the ways that we're similar in spite of our differences, discovering these culinary connections across borders and geographies while living in arguably the second most diverse region in the world, which is what the Greater Toronto Area is, mm-hmm. just it opened up so much possibility for me.
What brought you to that area in Canada? How did you find your way there?
Basically, one of my best friends was like, oh, I'm moving to Canada. You should move to Canada. And I was like, what for? I don't really want to. And this was about 7 years before I actually moved. But it was a series of life's changes at that time. I was going through like personal stuff. I had quit my job. I was thinking of embarking on further academic study. I wanted to go back to school. My children were growing older. They were teenagers at the time. Now I have two adults and one teenager. But it was just this happy union of a variety of things that made me decide, okay, January 2020 is a good time to make a move to another country and to start, you know, what I think of as the second phase of my life.
The book is called Chop Chop, and you explain why it's called that in the book, but let's give people a little teaser and explain that part now.
So I think of chop as this umbrella word for food in Nigeria, and both as a noun, but also in other ways. And a chop chop is an eater, an avid consumer of culinary delights. And so for me, it kind of reflected both my enthusiasm and my desire to eat, but also to community. So a chop chop is a gourmand, a gastronome, a food lover. And typically, it's a word or a phrase that I use almost every day. So usually it's with my children, you know, I'll see them like eating and really enjoying something. And I'll be like, ah, chop chop, like you're really into what you're consuming and what you're enjoying. So yes.
How did you land on the format for the book? How did you figure out everything that you would include? And I'm sure in all of your research that you found things that you weren't able to include. How did the framing and the format become the book that we hold before us now?
So it was a number of things. It was, I knew there would be recipes, but I'm really a long-form writer and a long-form talker, as you might have guessed. And so I have a lot of notes, like physical notebooks, online notes, and I have this particular document where I have highlighted what I think of as essential Nigerian ingredients. And I knew that not all of those ingredients would fit into the recipe format. And so I spoke with my editor and I was like, I would like to have interstitial essays, so essays between each chapter. And what I envisioned for the essays were kind of a deeper peek into Nigerian cuisine and culture. So my original hope was to combine in the essays something about the whole grains. So, you know, there's a chapter on millet and sorghum, for instance, but also to kind of look at what food festivals, celebrations, practices, myths, cultural aspects kind of related to those ingredients. So that was one bit. And then the leading to it chapter is a double page spread of gorgeous photography by James Ransom, my friend and collaborator on this project. And that came because I had initially written like a 50 page glossary at the start of the book, you know, just to help readers familiarize themselves with the ingredients. And that was all text. But my editor was like, people will be exhausted. A reader coming to this new cuisine will be exhausted. And so I was like, I have a museum diploma and kind of visual curation is something I really enjoy. And so I was like, okay, well, how about we take those, how about I look at the key ingredients in that chapter? They may not only exist in that chapter, but how about I highlight a selection? We make this gorgeous spread, which also is like collapsing multiple photos into one spread. And then you give readers a chance to see what the ingredient is with kind of like a small description at the side. And so again, those were like ongoing thoughts. I feel like the process of writing a book is you start off with a blueprint, but you have to stay open to making adjustments as needed. And for me, I just wanted it to be a rich visual offering to kind of support the reader as well.
What is your desired audience? Is it everyone?
Cultural enthusiasts, children who love photos, people who are on personal journeys of identity, curious people, people who love cookbooks as bedside reading, not necessarily to cook, people who love to cook, Nigerians at home and abroad, people in the diaspora, the West African diaspora, whose roots and origins and bridges of culture, you know, are in Nigeria and in West Africa. So pretty much everyone, yes.
Everyone. What type of cook are you when you're at home? And are you able to, or do you cook like just for your family or just for fun and have it not feel related to your work? Or is it all kind of linked up by now?
Since I finished the book, I've been in a weird culinary cooking space. So me prior, I cooked a lot. I'd cook often and would eat often and you know, make things and be creative. I'm less so now. I still cook. I still cook for my family and friends. My children are much older now, and they all have very different eating times, desires. And so I don't get a chance to cook one thing that all three of them enjoy at the same time. I'm definitely more of a disordered cook now. I also really like to cook at midnight when everyone's asleep. Yeah, so I cook, I eat, but it's changed since writing the book.
What else has happened for you since the book came out earlier this year? Where has it brought you? Has it been, you know, essentially an enjoyable experience since Pub Date?
It's been enjoyable. And I'm learning more about myself through it. I had many notions of what being a published author is. And I love meeting people. I love hearing people's stories about the book. I love hearing feedback about the book. I feel like I expected everything to happen on day one of the book. And, you know, I've just been reflecting on how a book is a lifelong thing. And what I want for my book is a happy life, a life of meaning, of transformation, of touching people. Many of the books in my library, or many of the books that have really influenced my thinking, are books from decades ago. For instance, there's a 1934 Nigerian book called The Kudeti Book of Yoruba Cookery. And it's like 70, 80 pages. That singular book has transformed my understanding of Nigerian cuisine. it's not like the recipes are particularly well written, but just by researching and understanding the context in which that book was written, the ingredients that are listed that are no longer in everyday use. I'm talking about a, 80, 90-year-old book?
Yeah.
That still resonates and has meaning for me in 2025. If my book does half of that, if in 40 years someone picks up Chop Chop and they're like, oh, this is what ancient Nigerian cuisine was, my job is done.
It is a stunning book. You can tell that there's so much heart and thought and time put into it. And I've really loved meeting you and talking to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Azaz Soko is the author of Chop Chop, Cooking the Foods of Nigeria. I spoke with her at a Culinary Arts at SPAC and WAMC On the Road event in Saratoga Springs, New York on November 15th. The next Culinary Arts at SPAC event, Potluck Desserts, Joyful Recipes to Share with Pride, will take place on December 4th. Justin Burke will be in conversation with me, and some of the best bakers in the region will make recipes from Potluck Desserts to share with attendees. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at WAMC.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.